Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. We've got a dynamic hour for you, and I'm so delighted that we're going to be able to interact not only with my wonderful guest this afternoon, but also with you. So I'd like for you to write down this toll-free telephone number, where if you want to call in later on in the hour, you'll be able to do so. The telephone number is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. There's rarely a day that goes by that I am not talking with someone that is facing a health challenge of one kind or another. Stories are, each and every one of them, very, very unique. And my guest this afternoon, Bill Goss, retired Lieutenant Commander of the U.S. Navy, his story, I feel, is just an exceptional one. And I've had the privilege of talking with Bill in the past and sharing his story with other listeners, and I'm so glad I'm going to be able to do this again today. Good afternoon, Bill, and thank you so much for being my guest today.
Good afternoon, Donna.
Now, you're in Florida.
Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes, so I should say good evening, because you're 3 hours ahead of us out there.
Absolutely.
Bill, your story is such a poignant one, but I would like for our listeners to know a little bit more about you and your background. And first, you have always had a passion for animals.
Huge passion for animals, particularly the cold-blooded kind.
The snakes, yes.
The snakes and lizards and turtles and salamanders. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm an adult now, but I still have a passion for those animals. Our home in Jacksonville, Florida is like a veritable zoo. We have lots of snakes and salamanders and alligators and turtles. And also a Yorkie and, lots and lots of animals. And I believe that if you can love an animal, then you can love everybody and everything.
You have had such a passion for life ever since you were a little squirt. Animals were just something that were so important to you. You incorporated them in your life in such a special way. But you had another passion. And that was a passion for flying. Tell us where that came from.
Well, I'm from a large family, 6 kids, no money, in New Jersey, and I always looked at flying as something that only rich people could do. And ever since I was a small boy, I was just very excited by the story of Chuck Yeager breaking the sound barrier, but all of that seemed out of reach, being that I didn't have any money. But it was a dream of mine to someday fly somehow, and I guess in high school I kind of forgot that dream, Donna, because I was a garbage man hanging on the back of a garbage truck, and, something, a crazy kind of thing happened that inspired me from being a garbage man to go to college and ultimately become a Navy pilot, and I did break the sound barrier pretty much 20 years after my dream as a garbage man and 30 years after my dream as a 9-year-old boy. I broke the sound barrier flying an F-18 Hornet off the coast of Jacksonville, Florida.
I'd like to know, what was it that pushed your buttons? You said something inspired you. We have young people that listen to the show. What inspired you to not want to stay as a garbage man, but to go to college and to reach for that dream?
Well, I was 18 years old. I had long hair, and being a garbage man was a pretty good job. You got off of work at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You got up early, but fat, dumb, and happy, long hair. And I was working with this other guy who was about 10 years older than me, and a very healthy-looking guy, but not the most intelligent guy in the world. And I loaded this garbage can into the back of the truck, and then I pulled that handle, which causes that huge 10-ton compressor to come down and crush all the garbage in. And while, right before the thing started hitting the garbage, the guy I'm working with, he reaches deep inside the garbage, back of the garbage truck, almost losing his arm, pulls something out, and he goes, "This can't go to waste," and it's a lobster tail.
Oh,
and he takes a bite out of it. And Donna, right back, Donna, that second, immediately, I said, "I'm going to college." Completely, I came home. My mother said, "How was work?" "I'm going to college." "But you didn't want to go to college before." "I do now." And I took my garbage man earnings. I bought an old Volvo for $80, and I drove 2,700 miles, almost 3,000 miles from New Jersey to Tucson, Arizona, and I got into the University of Arizona in Tucson, which was a very cheap state school at the time,
mm-hmm.
paid up all my garbage man earnings, and got it, you know, got into the, paid for the tuition, but then I was flat broke, and then I started working as a dynamiter 5,000 feet underground while in college to pay for the rest of the school year.
Mm. Now that is another phase. Working as a dynamiter, you've got to tell us a few of your wonderful experiences with that.
I got pretty good at dynamiting 5,000 feet underground. It was for a copper mine called Magma Copper Mine. It was one of the most copper mines are giant open pit mines, but
mm-hmm.
this was underground 5,000 feet. You jumped in an elevator, it dropped 5,000 feet in about 45 seconds. It was quite a wild ride. But I got very good at dynamiting, using gunpowder, dynamite, blasting caps, all sorts of stuff. And remember, this is a long-haired kid making $4.13 an hour just to pay for college. And about about 8 months into it, which was pretty much almost the end of the school year, 5,000 feet underground, I worked from 6 in the morning till 6 at night on Saturday and Sunday. And it was 60 miles away from school, too, so that old Volvo took me there every Saturday and Sunday. And so I'm working underground and had my headlamp on, which you always do, but you did a lot of working underground alone in terms of someone might be in a tunnel near you, but you actually were in your own tunnel by yourself called a chute. And I heard this crack, and I knew what the crack was, and it was a giant piece of granite breaking about 40 feet above where I stood. I dove out of the way, but it hit me, and I woke up hanging over a 40-foot hole with these giant steel trapdoors slamming, and I couldn't see them slamming. I could just hear them because my headlamp had been knocked out. And that was one of the scariest moments of my life, Donna, because it was pitch black. I did not know whether I was dead or alive. I just didn't know what to think.
Well, and how long did that job last?
It lasted about an hour after that accident.
I couldn't resist that. I just couldn't.
because finally, I thought they were going to light off. They would set the dynamite all off simultaneously right at 12 noon exactly. And thankfully, my Mexican foreman came looking for me because he did a head count. And, he counted 23 instead of 24, and he halted the blast and came and found me, and that's when I learned that there's always a light at the end of the tunnel for you if you keep your eyes open wide and you're hopeful. And because I saw this little flicker in the distance, and it got brighter and brighter, and then all of a sudden, it wasn't until I saw the light that I realized I was alive. Because, you know, I don't know what it's like being dead, so I just was in pitch black, and I didn't, you know, my body was in shock. I didn't know what to think. But seeing this illumination get brighter and brighter coming towards me, that's an experience I'll never forget. And then he took me up out of the mine, and that was the last day I ever set foot underground.
Uh-huh. Well, as you can tell, my guest, Bill Goss, who is a retired lieutenant commander of the U.S. Navy, this is a man who's had a lot of adventures in his life. Everything from working involved with animals when he was a kid and having a number of adventures, and then being a garbage man, also being involved in blasting. His book that we're going to be talking about shortly, and this is information in his book, There's a Flying Squirrel in My Coffee. This is Bill's story about how he has overcome cancer with the help of his pet. Bill, I would like for you to share with my listeners. Here you eventually became a pilot. You went into the Navy. You became a pilot. You fulfilled your dream of being able to fly an F-18. You broke the sound barrier, a dream that you had for so many years since you were a child. But before you went on a particular flight, you went in to see your doctor. Why did you go in to see your doctor, and what happened?
Well, I had a tiny little bump on the back of my left ear that was growing rapidly, and it was itching really badly, and it was perfectly clear skin. There was no discoloration at all, and because it was itching so much and it got to be about the size of a pea, and I went into the doctor and I was told it was a harmless fatty cyst. Said, Commander Goss, it's nothing to worry about. Everyone has bumps on their ears. And I just said, listen, I don't care. It's itching like crazy. Cut this thing off. Please cut it off. So he cut it off, and they always biopsy anything they cut off. Then I broke the sound barrier. And when I got back to the office after breaking the sound barrier, there was a message on my machine at work. I was working for the Admiral, and the message was, Commander Goss, you have an appointment to see the ear, nose, and throat surgeon right away. I called up, and I said, when's my appointment? And they said, right now, get over here right away. And that's when I got that horrible news, Donna, about this Navy commander, ear, nose, and throat surgeon said, hey, you have cancer. And, you know, you could be dead in 6 months. And when he did not look me in the eyes, I just suddenly had this chill that he did not believe that I could be dead in 6 months. But I could tell that this guy believed with almost 100% certainty that I would be dead in 6 months. And that's when I started to learn about something I knew nothing about, which was malignant melanoma and particularly, you know, and cancer.
Now, with this, you were in for surgery, and this surgery was massive. I have photos of you where they cut away your head. I mean, tell us about the surgery and what you went through, because this was life-threatening. You did not have very much margin of time. What were the odds, and what did they do?
Well, malignant melanoma is one of those tricky kinds of cancer because there's three kinds of skin cancer: basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell or squamous cell carcinoma, and then the deadliest kind, malignant melanoma. But malignant melanoma normally starts out as a little black mole, and if that mole is removed before it starts getting, you know, and doctors sometimes use the word just funky, before it starts getting funky looking, it's minimal surgery. It's just removing a mole. But if you wait a day or two late, when the mole suddenly starts to bleed or get funky, that mole then has had a chance to go metastatic. And the mole I had was not a mole. It was unusual in that it was perfectly clear skin. I had a rare form of melanoma called amelanotic melanoma, which means melanoma without any melanin or skin pigmentation. And so, also, it turned out to be extremely deep. A melanoma tumor the size of a pea is actually 1 billion highly malignant cancer cells. And it was on my ear and the inside of my left ear, which is 1 inch from your brain. So I was told I had about a 1-2% chance of survival over a 5-year period of time.
Now, here you're given this statement, a 1-2% chance of survival. What made you say, I'm going to take the chance for survival due to surgery? A lot of people would sit back and say, oh, my God, if that's it, I'm dead. They would do nothing. Why did you choose to do something that you were going to fight? Why?
Well, a couple different things. First of all, I had boy-girl twins who were 6 years old at the time, and I just could not imagine leaving them fatherless. Secondly, I think you know from the book, the first book I wrote was The Luckiest Unlucky Man Alive, and in
mm-hmm.
that book I talk about the story of when I was struck by an out-of-control car and knocked 45 feet through the air. And that had happened a few years earlier, and I was looking down at my body face down in this ditch, and that whole experience changed the way I looked at passing to the beyond. My out-of-body experience was sensational. I have no fear of dying, but I do believe we all have an appropriate time to go, and my time was no longer appropriate, being a 38-year-old Navy pilot with cancer. And then third, I had my brain scanned for cancer, and a very nerve-wracking experience, and I could not sleep the night before, and I woke up and went outside at 2 o'clock in the morning and had gotten this terrible prognosis. And Donna men do this sometime out in their backyard late at night. I took a whiz in the bushes, and I'm praying while I'm taking a whiz, and I'm staring up at the sky, and I'm praying for a sign that everything would be okay, and suddenly a giant, giant meteor went across the sky from one horizon to the other, and that caused me to just sit down on my back porch and cry, because it was just, it was rude. It struck me, it was just, the timing was perfect. And so those three things inspired me to do whatever it took to survive.
Now, here you go through the surgery. The effect is dramatic. It is such a tremendously intensive surgery, and your whole face was distorted, the side of your head, and you then had to go home and recuperate, and you went through what many people would go through, which we'd call depression. There's really a tough time, but you had a very special buddy who was a veterinarian. How did he help you turn things around?
Well, first, the surgery lasted 12 hours long. They took off most of my left ear. They took out my left jugular vein, which ended my career as a Navy pilot, but they also lifted off my left side of my face and removed my entire salivary system, and they removed my left trapezoid muscle, and the swelling in my head was the size of a watermelon. I had hundreds of big brass staples all up and down my face and neck. It was rough, and I was home on morphine, and a veterinarian friend of mine brought over a tiny little baby flying squirrel that had fallen out of a tree, and he asked if I would take care of this squirrel and help. If no one took care of this little baby squirrel, it was going to die, and he thought that this would be a good project for me, but what he really knew was that this would be a wonderful distraction for me, because when you have a cancer diagnosis or any other diagnosis of a serious illness where there's not a lot of hope, very often what you need is just a wonderful, marvelous distraction. And a little flying squirrel the size of a cotton ball sitting on my head eating a pecan while I was on morphine, drinking coffee and reading the newspaper every morning wearing a bathrobe, it was a wonderful little distraction for me.
Now, the title of your book, and for those of you that have just tuned in, my guest is Bill Goss, Lieutenant Commander of the U.S. Navy. He is retired. The book's title is There's a Flying Squirrel in My Coffee, Overcoming Cancer with the Help of My Pet. Now, here is this beautiful little person, that's what I'll call him, little fur person. His name was Rocky. How did he get the name Rocky?
My boy, girl, twin, 6 years old, I said, what are we going to call him? And take a guess what they It was pretty apparent it was going to be called Rocky when you got two little six-year-olds at home who watch cartoons.
Now, Rocky was so good for you in that he was not in any way discriminating. He didn't look at you in any unusual way. He really entertained the whole family. All of you were under all of this stress because of this drama of this condition that's unfolding. And here you have this little tiny creature that fits in your pocket. What happens the one morning that makes you realize how very, very fortunate you are?
Well, about a week or two after the surgery, and Rocky had gotten used to sitting on the top of my head eating a pecan while I would read the newspaper, and as I said, I was on a heavy dose of morphine, and I was up to help, helping the kids get ready to walk to school, and my wife would be making them breakfast, and I was sitting at the kitchen table reading the paper, Rocky on my head eating a pecan, and I lifted up my coffee cup to take a sip out of it, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, just a huge, achoo, huge sneeze. And then I opened up my eyes, and here I was eyeball to eyeball with this little flying squirrel that was in my coffee cup staring at me nose to nose, and all of a sudden I called out to my family, there's a flying squirrel in my coffee. And then an instant later, Rocky jumped onto my shoulder and then jumped back up onto my head, and then he started licking himself off and preening himself and probably getting a pretty good caffeine buzz.
Now, with this particular experience, it really helped to lift your spirits, didn't it? Because it made you feel like you were somebody pretty special, someone pretty unique. Even though you had gone through this horrific trauma, this little flying squirrel with these great, big, dark, beautiful eyes that peered at you out of your coffee cup.
Well, when you're diagnosed with cancer, a lot of people describe it as suddenly waking up and discovering that you're treading water out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean alone by yourself at night. The feeling of aloneness and separateness from the universe is extraordinary. And this is a very common thing for people who are dealt some real tough blows, particularly with severe illness, where it's terminal. Suddenly you feel like you're alone in the universe, and that you're, why would God be looking out for you, one little speck out of 6 billion other specks in this universe full of specks? And when I called out, there's a flying squirrel in my coffee, all of a sudden I started laughing because I suddenly had this realization that I was special, I was different, and that God would take note of me that morning. I was unique and special because I had to be the only person in the universe that had a flying squirrel in their coffee that morning.
I'd have to agree with you, because most of us don't ever see a flying squirrel. I know you got a bunch of them there in Florida that are very humble. Now, you really got into nutrition, too. You went through some very serious studies about nutrition and how to help your body help itself. And you talk about lecithin, and I believe it's DHEA, and some other things. What was the particular tonic that you fixed for yourself that your family used to tease you about?
Well, a couple different things. One, I think the most important thing for most people to do is to stay super hydrated with just regular old tap water. They don't have to get bothered, you know. Just a tap water is so much better than the next best thing in terms of for your body. But then secondly, I would mix a concoction of high fiber and roughage and lecithin and bran and put it in my cereal, which my children called Daddy's colon blow. There was one thing you wouldn't disturb Dad after eating his morning cereal and having a cup of coffee. You just would, okay, leave him alone for a while. but I do believe that keeping your tubes clear is extremely important for proper health. And also, the fiber absorbs an awful lot of fat that you've got in your gut. And I have a huge appetite. I always have. And my wife cannot understand why I'm not pushing 300 pounds, but I'm not. And it's just because, I think, because of Daddy's colon blow, because of staying very hydrated, and also DHEA, which I've been taking for 12 years now, dihydroepiandrosterone, which is one of the most common hormones in your body when you're a young person, and particularly it's at its highest levels in your blood when you're in your teens and early 20s, and then it decreases dramatically as you get older. And it's a simple hormone. You can get it at any drugstore or Walmart. It does not require a prescription. But I boost my levels of DHEA up to more youthful levels. And, you know, I believe in a very significant way that that's been very helpful in my immune system, in my mood, and in my muscle-to-body fat ratio. And the difference between my friends who I persuaded to start taking it and have for 10 years and the ones who haven't, it looks like the friends who've been taking it are the children of the friends who didn't take it, and we're all the same age.
Amazing. My guest this afternoon has been Bill Goss, Lieutenant Commander of the U.S. Navy. He is retired. The title of his wonderful book is There's a Flying Squirrel in My Coffee. And he also has another book, The unluckiest, luckiest man alive.
The luckiest, unlucky man alive.
Uh-huh. See?
It is a tongue twister.
Yes, it is. And his stories that he shares, his life has been a very interesting one, but the challenges he's faced, most of us would not face. And I'm grateful that he has been able to write his story because it's very inspirational. He gives so much good information. And, Bill, your life has changed. You've been in some major movies. What's your project now you're involved with?
Well, just a new movie's coming out called Lonely Hearts, and I play a cop in it, and I actually have John Travolta and James Gandolfini, Tony Soprano in The Sopranos, hand me a photograph and ask me if I recognize this woman. And, it's a true crime movie. A lot of fun. Selma Hayek's in it. And so that will be hitting the theaters probably in a month or two. But I got to tell you, it's an awful lot of fun to be in a major movie with people like this, just from the sheer entertainment value. And particularly, James Gandolfini was extremely funny with me, you know, calling me copper and putting his arm around my shoulder and telling me jokes and things like that. So that's coming out, and I've been in three movies before that, G.I. Jane. I picked Cucumbers with Halle Berry in the movie Their Eyes Were Watching God. And I actually was in a fight scene with Colin Farrell on a mountaintop in Thailand in Alexander, Oliver Stone's movie, which didn't do too well at the box office, but it's a pretty interesting movie.
Well, as you can tell, this man has a passion for living, and he has not, because of what he went through with the battle of cancer. He was a fighter, determined that even with a 1% chance of survival, he was going to take that 1%. He did, and he's with us today, many years later. Bill Goss, Lieutenant Commander of the U.S. Navy, retired. There's a flying squirrel in my coffee. His other book is The Luckiest Unlucky Man Alive. Get a copy. It's a great gift for someone that maybe is facing challenges. If nothing else, gift yourself with this material. Bill, what's your website that people can go to?
It's very simple. It's billgoss.com. B-I-L-L-G-O-S-S. S is in snake. Or S is in survivor. However you want to S it, but don't turn it into an F. Everyone screws up the last name. They think it's Goff, G-O-F-F, like Frank.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to say.
Well, as my audience can tell, you have a wonderful sense of humor. You have a great attitude about life. You speak all over the country. You want people to know that they do make a difference. They're just as unique as you are, and they should take their 1% or whatever they get. Most of them get more than 1%. Bill, thank you so much for being with me today. It's been a delight.
My pleasure, Donna.
And again, billgoss.com. Go there. You can find all kinds of information about Bill. You can also order his books, and I know he'd be happy to autograph them for you. But keep in mind, you might end up having a squirrel in your coffee cup one day. There's a flying squirrel in my coffee overcoming cancer with the help of his wonderful pet, Rocky. Bill Goss, Lieutenant Commander of the U.S. Navy, retired. Have a fabulous life, Bill. We're taking a break. We're going to be back after this. This is Donna Sebo. And don't forget, telephone lines are going to be open 877-876-5227. That line is now open for you if you want to call in. Donna Sebo, we'll be back in just a moment. Bill, are you still on the line?
Sure, I'm Donna. I didn't know whether you wanted me to stay on or not.
Nope, that's fine. We're taking a break, so you can just go right ahead. And, Chief, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, thank you. You're a real pro, and have a wonderful Friday night. And it was real nice talking to your husband, Freeman, last night.
Thank you.
Very nice guy.
Yes, he is. So glad you were able to have the chance to chat with him. You have a great life now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. I think that something has happened with our equipment, so I'm just going to move right along. I wanted to let you know, get that pad of paper out and pen, because I have got a wonderful chocolate Rocky Road bite recipe. This is chocolate Rocky Road candy that I think that you will really enjoy. Also, my goodness, Father's Day is going to be coming up this Sunday, so I want to be sure that you have a little bit of information about Father's Day, so we're going to be telling you a little bit about that and how that came about. But I do want to let you know about my guests that are going to be coming up next week. We have Jamie Novak on Monday. We're going to talk about how to get organized. Ah, yes. There's going to be 1,000 best organizing tips. Of course, we're only going to be able to give you a few, but you might want to tune in and see if you can pick up some ideas that will serve you well. Jamie is quite an expert at this. This is what she does. Then, also, we're going to be talking with a psychic, Patricia Heller. And Patricia was inspired to write the book because of Hear the Message Three Times, Listen. And she was inspired to write it because of her journey of developing her own intuitive abilities. And then we're going to be talking with Dr. Gran Cagnolo, and he is going to be talking about fear. This is going to be next Wednesday. His book is titled, Why Am I So Afraid? Gracious, we all have to deal with those issues, so you're not going to want to miss him. Then we're going to be talking with Bruce Moen. I had the privilege of chatting with him yesterday, and we were just confirming the show. Have you ever wondered about life after death? Have you wondered about being able to communicate with people? Well, this is a man that's done a lot of research into this. He has a wonderful guidebook called Afterlife Knowledge, and we'll be talking about that next Thursday. If you're a person that loves show business, you would like to become a star one day, or would love to know about how you can find an agent to become that star, well, Margaret Emery is an agent. She's out of New York. She's written a book called Ask an Agent, and she is going to be with us. So we're going to be able to talk with her. And we've got so many other wonderful, wonderful things coming up this month. Now, I want to remind you, don't forget, July the 1st, the Donna Sebo Show is being moved to the 11 a.m. to noon hour. 11 a.m. to noon. So make sure you make a note on your calendars or on your clocks, or if you have a reminder on your computers, set it up so you don't miss a show, because we've got a dynamic lineup set up for the month of July. Yes, often I have guests booked out as far as 2 months in advance. So we have a wonderful lineup of people, a lot of different subject matter, and I know that you will enjoy doing that and listening to it. And, hey, isn't it neat when you can just tag bbsradio.com and just know you can listen to it and have it there playing in the background? You don't have to miss a thing. Father's Day is coming up this Sunday, and how did this come about? How did Father's Day come about? Well, we all know that Mother's Day came around first, and so that was a very popular holiday. And, of course, if we're going to honor Mom, we should honor Dad, right? Right. Well, not only was the first Father's Day service held in Fairmont, West Virginia, in July 1908, just 2 months after and 20 miles down the river from the first Mother's Day in Grafton, but the woman who was chiefly responsible for popularizing the celebration, Mrs. John Bruce of Spokane, Washington, got the idea while listening to a Mother's Day sermon. And that was in 1909. Now, by the following year, Mrs. John Bruce had persuaded the Spokane City Fathers to observe one Sunday in June as an official tribute to paternity. Now, her original choice for the celebration was June the 5th, the birthday of her dad, who had, all by himself, raised 6 children. His wife died shortly after the last child was born, but the third Sunday proved logistically a lot more acceptable, and so it has stayed every since. Now, although fathers are widely honored on that June day, beginning early in the century, and although President Wilson endorsed it as he had Mother's Day, the legal side of the paternal holiday was slow in coming. For over 60 years, presidents had to make an annual ad hoc proclamation, for Congress was strangely reluctant, I can't figure out why, to give Dad an equal and permanent footing with Mom. The Father's Day recognition was not officially recognized until 1972. That's when Congress established the national holiday for all of you dads. Just thought you would enjoy knowing a little bit of that trivia regarding a holiday that I think is enjoyed by so many. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Now, I told you that I had a special recipe. I don't know about you, but chocolate is absolutely one of my favorite substances on the planet. And there's so many different ways that you can fix it. If you're like me, you don't have a heck of a lot of time to fiddle around in the kitchen. I don't care how much you like it. Unless you really are a full-time chef, you're not going to have all that much time to make something very special that has that personal touch. Well, I found this recipe, and it is so nice. You only have 4 ingredients in it, and you could serve it up to just about anybody at any time when you want that little bit of sweet. It makes a wonderful gift. These are the 4 ingredients, and I'm going to tell you how you can do it. So get out your pad of paper and pen. Now, what you're going to need is 4.5 ounces of milk chocolate. If you're like me, you prefer dark chocolate, so you want to get either one. 4.5 ounces of milk chocolate, or if you prefer, you can use dark chocolate. You're then going to need 2.5 ounces of mini multicolored marshmallows. 2.5 ounces of mini multicolored marshmallows. Now, if you don't have the multicolored mini marshmallows, you can use the all white ones, or if you only have big marshmallows, then cut them up. Make mini marshmallows out of the big ones. It's real simple. And when you do it, dip your scissors into flour, and then that way, or spray them with Pam. Pam's even better. Spray your scissors if you're going to cut the big ones. Spray your scissors with Pam, and then you'll cut through the marshmallows beautifully. Won't stick to the scissors at all. Now, the third ingredient you're going to need is 1/4 cup of chopped walnuts. Now, you don't want these walnuts chopped too fine. You want them chunky. And then you need 1 ounce of no-need-to-soak dried apricots chopped. So you chop them up. But you don't make them real, real tiny pieces. You mean little, nice little chunks. Now, this is how simple it is. Oh, by the way, often I like to use dried cherries instead of the apricots. Mm-hmm. You can experiment with different things. This recipe is so easy. Just 4 ingredients. That's all. All right, now this is what you're going to need to do. You take a cookie sheet and you line it with baking parchment. You put it aside. Now your chocolate, your milk chocolate or your dark chocolate, you want to break it into small pieces and melt in a double boiler. If you like dark chocolate, you can get the chocolate chips and just use those. Those are already broken up. You don't even have to go through the step of breaking anything up if you use chocolate chips. And then after you have melted them gently over boiling water in a double boiler, you want to stir in the marshmallows, the walnuts, and the apricots. And you want to gently take a spatula and then just fold them until all of these ingredients are completely coated in the chocolate. Then what you want to do is place heaping teaspoonfuls of the mixture onto the prepared cookie sheet. Very simple. And then all you have to do is put them in the refrigerator. How easy can that get? Put them in the refrigerator. Now, once they set up, you want to very carefully remove the candies from the baking parchment. And if you want to get fancy, you can put them in those little candy cups that you buy, and that'll just look so pretty, and put them on a nice little plate. Or maybe get some lace doilies or something that you put on a plate, and those candies can be out there. They are just great, and they're so much fun. And again, you can use different types of dried fruit if you like. It's just absolutely marvelous. And you know what? You can keep these candies stored in a cool, dry place for up to 2 weeks if they last that long. You'll be lucky if they last an hour once they're finished. You're not going to be able to just eat one, I betcha. So, anyway, Rocky Road Bites. It makes 18 of them, and they're just perfect with coffee or tea, or if you wanted to make up something special to take to a friend, then here, these are such an easy, easy recipe. Rocky Road Bites. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. I'd be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a call. The toll-free number is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And I've been getting some emails from some of you that say that you want to know if I do private sessions for people. Yes, I do. But if you need to call me, you can always call me at my office, which is 800-872-8852. That's my office number. That's a toll-free number. And then my email is donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. And you can email me if you've got a special story, a special recipe. I get stuff every single day, and I'd be delighted to receive it, and I'll answer your email. Sometimes my schedule gets a bit hectic, so it may be a day before I can get back to you or so. But just know you will get an answer from me. But I caution you. If you don't hear from me within a week, then you know that maybe it's gotten lost in cyberspace, so don't be afraid to send me another email. I had someone that chatted with me just the other day, and they said, Donna, I sent you an email. I said, I never got it. You know, it goes off into cyberspace somewhere. You just never know where it's going to land. Norman Cousins is a man that is so well remembered for his belief in laughter, in maintaining wellness. This was a man that was given a negative verdict, too, for his health, and he was just not going to do it the way other people, other medical people thought that he should do it. Well, he was asked one time by a group of physicians to meet with some cancer patients at a hospital, and he related this story to the patients there. He told them how he had lost a quarter in a payphone, and he was talking to the operator. He said, I put in a quarter and didn't get my number. She said, well, sir, if you give me your name and your address, we'll mail the coin to you. And he recited a full and long litany of all the steps and procedures and expense involved in returning his coin that way and concluded, now, operator, why don't you just return my coin and let's be friends? Well, she repeated her script again and then asked if he had pushed the coin return plunger. He hadn't. But when he did, the phone box spewed out close to $4 worth of change. $4. The operator said, sir, would you please put the coins back in the box? And Cousins replied, if you give me your name and address, I'll be glad to mail you the coins. Oh, don't you just love somebody with a sense of humor? And I relate to that because a few years back I used to be a long-distance operator, so I can totally relate with the long-distance operator that was talking to him and the scripts you have to use. But it's amazing what we go through. You know, how... And when he finished, everybody in the room had just laughing and were just really enjoying the story. And then one of the physicians asked a question of the patients after things quieted down a bit. He asked them, how many of you came into this room in pain? More than half of them raised their hands. And he asked another question, how many of you in the past few minutes had less or no pain? Every one of the patients nodded. Yes. Laughter. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. Sometimes we get so serious and we get so involved with ourselves, we forget that laughter is something that should be a part of life. Well, someone once told me, when you take yourself too seriously, what you need to do is stand in front of a mirror and make faces. Actually, I think when you look at yourself first thing in the morning, that's one of the biggest jokes you can ever face. Of course, I won't say that about myself. But anyway, you just know. You need to take life sometimes a little lightly. And that's not always easy to do, because sometimes we have some big burdens. I think of Bill, and again, I've known of Bill for the past 5 years. And this man, you know, people would look at him today, would not have any idea the challenges that he had faced. But he faced them. And he had a good family, and the love of a little squirrel named Rocky. By the way, Rocky has ended up having a girlfriend, yes. And Rocky has lived to be quite an old squirrel. Most squirrels in the wild don't last more than 5 years. But Rocky has lived to be 12 plus. So the thing is, when we share stories like about Bill and others, remember, you have this moment now. This is when you should take joy and make it your companion. It's a good thing to do. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, all I need is your first name or your initial. Give me a buzz, 877-876-5227. Donna Siebel here. We are taking a break. Don't you go away. Hi, this is Donna Siebel. I'm not hearing my engineer, so I don't know what kind of equipment problems he's having, so we're just going to keep moving along. I had mentioned to you there was a historical archaeological discovery up in the waters of Alaska. And I had no idea about these particular vessels. One of them had gone to a depth of 88 feet down. Now, this is regarding one ship, one of many ships, actually, a ship called Hassler. And it was just amazing to read about this information and then to actually see the photographs on this. Now, let me give you the website. It's NOAA Research, and it's the NOAA's Office of Oceanic and Atmospheric research. And this is from their archives. They had the opportunity, funded by a grant from NOAA Office of Ocean Exploration. They were researchers and archaeologists from Alaska's Office of History and Archaeology, NOAA's National Marine Sanctuary Program, and the University of Alaska Fairbanks. They decided they were going to descend into the frigid southeast Alaskan waters between April the 4th and April 10th of this year to collect information on some of Alaska's most famous shipwrecks. And it provided an archaeological baseline of information at five different important sites, including the late 19th century U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey vessel named for the agency's first superintendent, Ferdinand Rudolf Hassler. Now, when Hassler first came to the United States, this was a time when there was very little scientific knowledge. There were a lot of politics that he had to battle and big financial problems, but he decided he wanted to bring science to the young nation he had decided to move to. Now, this group of archaeological individuals decided they were going to use a high-frequency sonar unit to collect information on three submerged wreck sites. And after they assessed the local water conditions, and believe me, they are bitter cold up there in the far north, they decided to dive on two of the three submerged wreck sites. One was the Princess Kathleen and the Clara Nevada, which is the former survey vessel, the Hassler. And they worked in icy, icy temperatures ranging from 38 to 41 degrees Fahrenheit and at depths of 88 feet. There were four divers, and again, there were archaeologists and marine biologists, and they really were able to get awesome pictures, and they were just, they're just incredible things. So if you can go to the website, it's great. Now, here's a little bit of information about the Clara Nevada. She was a Klondike Gold Rush steamer. Doesn't that provide a mental image? They provided so much information by doing what they did underwater. They're not quite sure how this vessel went down. It was 150 feet long, and they said the ship was heading south from Lynn Canal, heading south down Lynn Canal from Skagway in 1898, when people on shore reported seeing a bright orange fireball. Then the ship was burning, and that was burning near Eldred Brock. And they said all on board the vessel perished on what was the return leg of the first voyage after the vessel's name was changed from Hassler to the Clara Nevada. And they said that it provided, with this particular accident, it provided sufficient evidence of the need for the construction of the Eldred Rock Lighthouse, currently one of the oldest remaining lighthouses in the state of Alaska. Now, the history of the Clara Nevada, formerly named the Hassler, had become a part of local culture. And a lot of local features were named after the ship, including Hassler Island, Hassler Point, Hassler Cove, Lake Hassler, Hassler Pass, and Hassler Reef. And there's just a lot of other features that were named after many of the crew members who were lost in that terrible crash. They say the history of the ship is as interesting as her loss. The Clara Nevada was originally built as a hydrographic survey vessel, Hassler, in 1872, so she had been around a few years before she went down. She steamed through the Straits of Magellan with famed naturalist Jean-Louis Agraves and spent many years of hard work in Alaska. And Ferdinand Hassler maintained a tremendous dedication and an unswerving unwillingness to compromise his values and his beliefs. They said when he came to the U.S., he said he was definitely determined that he was going to really be involved in science, and he was going to be right at the very, very front of his particular area of expertise. So they're just going through all of this, and what's interesting, now here you have these bitter cold waters. They are on this expedition. They're finding all kinds of information, but you know what? Vandals had already been down on the sunken vessels. They found information and evidence of vandalism. And what they do today when they are down on sites, they place brass monuments and plastic tags to identify their protected status. Fascinating stuff. So there's a lot of people out there underwater doing a lot of research, even up in the far northern areas of Alaska. Alaska is one of my favorite places. There's just so much that it offers. There's so much history. And there's maybe a story I'll be able to share with you sometime in the future about a blue mammoth that they found up there. The blue ox, that's what it is. And it's actually on display, and it is blue. It's actually on display in the museum by the University of Fairbanks. It has so much fascinating history. You know, there's an old legend about Alaska, and that is that the Sleeping Lady Mountain, this is how it was told to me. I was told so many years ago, I've been traveling up there for like 26 years now, and it was shortly after I started going into the state to do broadcasting that I met a native from Alaska, and they said that it used to be very tropical up there, and though it was tropical, there was the time when the weather changed dramatically, and of course it turned bitter, bitter cold. So there was a chief of a particular group of Eskimos up there, and he was asked, when are we going to go back to the warm temperatures? And he pointed over to what we know as the Sleeping Lady today. He said, when the Sleeping Lady awakens, the weather will change. And to me, when I heard that, that meant volcanic activity. And, of course, volcanoes can change weather very, very quickly, and they are amazing natural phenomena. So whenever any activity starts going on up in Alaska or anywhere in the world, volcanic activity, I'm always reminded of that statement. So one day, what is now bitter, bitter cold may end up being a tropical paradise again, as it was so many generations ago. Well, I do know that we're out of time, and I'm so glad you were able to join me, and I so appreciate Bill Goss being my guest this afternoon. Don't forget, if you'd like some more information about him, go to BillGoss.com. And don't forget to go to my website and check out Glyconutrients. I have been so thrilled to be able to share this knowledge and information with people. And all you have to do is go to my website, go to the homepage, and that's DelphiInternational.com. And go to that homepage, go over to the left side, and tap on that Glyconutrient button. This is something that could change your life. And it will make you so happy to know that you have some options for bettering your own well-being that you never even knew were available. This is Donna Siebel. It is so good to spend this time with you, and I'm always so delighted to bring all of the wonderful people that I'm able to bring to the show so that maybe they can inspire your life. And don't forget, the shows are being archived, and there's a bunch of shows, the Donna Siebel Show. You can go in. You can check on the different guests. You can listen at your leisure. Just go to bbsradio.com. Go to the right side of the homepage and tap on the Donna Siebel Show. And there you'll be able to go into the archives and listen to as many programs as you want. You're welcome. And let me know what you think of them. Just send us a little note on a comment sheet there. There's a little comment button that you can tap. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless you. Have a great day. And just know that this is a magical time in your life. 1% possibility? Go for the gold. Donna Siebel, talk to you on Monday. Have a great day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.